Welcome to the FinTech One-on-One podcast. This is Peter Renton, chairman and co-founder of FinTech Nexus. I've been doing this show since 2013, which makes this the longest-running one-on-one interview show in all of FinTech. Thank you so much for joining me on this journey. Before we get started, I want to remind you about our comprehensive news service. FinTech Nexus News not only covers the biggest FinTech news stories, our daily newsletter delivers the most important FinTech stories into your inbox every morning with special commentary on the top story of the day. Stay on top of FinTech news by subscribing at news.fintechnexus.com/subscribe. Today on the show, I'm delighted to welcome Daniela Binacci. She is the co-founder and CTO of Pismo. Now, if you've heard of Pismo, it may well have been because they were in the news a lot last year when Visa announced they were acquiring the company. That acquisition completed in January. And we obviously talk about that in some depth. But Pismo is such an interesting company. They provide the technology back-end infrastructure for banks, fintechs, and other financial institutions. And we obviously talk about what they offer, how it all works. Daniela is a CTO, obviously very steeped in technology. We talk about the global footprint that they have and how they have attracted companies from all around the world. We talk about Pix and the impact that that has had on their company and on the ecosystem in Brazil. We obviously delve deeply into what the acquisition means for Pismo and what it means for Brazilian and Latin American fintech. And Daniela also talks about what is in store for the future. It was a fascinating discussion. Hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the podcast, Daniela.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Let's get started by giving the listeners a little bit of background about yourself. Can you just sit on some of the high points of your career to date?
Sure. So I started my career as a software engineer. I went through many of the different areas, starting as a programmer, but then going to databases, analytics, infrastructure, and security. Spent a couple of years in software house developments, but then joined another company here in Brazil back in 1999 to build a payments processing platform for pretty much providing services in Brazil. But then after 16 years working there, I decided to leave and then start setting up and launch Pismo. So the second processing platform in my life from scratch.
Okay. Well, let's kind of get into that then. What was the founding story of Pismo? I believe it was a bit of a family affair. Can you tell us sort of how it all came about?
Here at Pismo, we are in four people at the founding team. So me and Marcelo, Juliana, and Ricardo. Juliana is my sister. Marcelo is my husband. We've been working together for more than 25 years already. I met Marcelo working. And then as Julie was kind of following my path on the career, she joined us in 2000, 24 years ago as an intern by that time. So yes, it's true that we are family, but actually there was a lot of experience working together before. So we worked for 16 years in another company, being that platform that I just mentioned. And then we decided to leave. Actually, we decided to leave the other experience, not to launch Pismo. Each of us left the company for different reasons. But after a couple of time looking at the market, we kind of reunited and decided that it was time to do something different.
So what was it in the market that you saw? What was sort of the opportunity that you felt like needed to be created?
Actually, back in 2013, 14, there were lots of challenger and fintechs launching, not only here in Brazil, but also in Europe. There was Nubank, Neon, and outside we could see Monzo, Starling, many, many, many companies launching, building fully digital products. But what actually was going on was that innovation was only skin deep, let's say. Mm-hmm. They were still relying on legacy systems or they had enough funding to build their own processing platform. So most of the financial services industry until now are still operating on systems built in the 60s or 70s. They are still running in COBOL and physical data centers. And at that time, and it was by the time I left Conductor in 2014, I saw that the huge gap that there was between the financial services industry and other industries. Everybody was talking about public cloud, big data, and many new things. And we thought that there was time to bring innovation to what is under the hood. So instead of like those challengers and those banks that were looking for transformation would need something more like something relying on bleeding edge technology to get the resilience and the flexibility they want. So then we decided to launch Pismo.
Okay. You know, that was obviously a few years ago now, and you guys have been a big success. But I'm curious about those early days. How did you start getting traction?
It was not easy. Actually, we spent a couple of years. We launched Pismo in our 40s. So kind of it was a bootstrap. We invested our money. Me and Marcelo, actually, we spent until the last cent that we saved in our careers in the system, in this platform. And then when we moved to go to fundraising, when we signed the seed fundraising round in late 16, and we already have an MVP, a product that could, actually we started looking at something like what we were thinking was, how can we build a SaaS company? How can you provide services to players and that are only paying for what they use? Because usually when you see, especially when you look to retailers, like the big stores, the big chains, they have their own cards or products. The smaller ones doesn't have because it was too expensive to launch something like that. So we were looking in a way to democratize the use of those services. So we were looking to build an infrastructure that could be accessible not only to incumbents, but also to smaller fintechs. And so it was a bootstrap. We had a couple of clients, and then we get to sign with Redpoint Ventures in late 16 for a seed fundraising round. Mm-hmm. But then right after signing, they said, we love this, but this is going to be much more interesting for big incumbents who are looking for internal transformations. So at the very beginning, I used to say, I'm CTO of the company, but most of my conversations were with lawyers and people to like, how could I explain how client data would be stored in public cloud, that I didn't have the address of the data center. So it was much more a conversation around, because we're not only talking about outsource core processing. Is outsource core processing to a startup that will be storing our data on public cloud? So it was a hard conversation at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then finally, the regulator, the central bank here in Brazil, decided to make that legal, make that the store information in public cloud something that was allowed. And then things started to become a little easier, like the conversations were better.
Right. Okay. How do you describe Pismo today? Like, what are your core offerings?
What we have here, we have a full platform for developing financial services. So we provide core banking services, card services like debit, credit, prepaid cards. We provide services to the stock exchange here in Brazil. We provide corporate banking. We provide lending. So there's a bunch of services that were built that we create the capabilities on top of a full infrastructure for financial services. And the way that we built that is that we used to say, when you go to a bank, usually the conversation is around building versus buy. Like the whole financial services industry still rely on protocols that were developed 56 years ago. There's a protocol called ISO 8583, which is used by all the credit card networks. And the last release was in 1987. So it's not easy to hire people, hiring human resources that really understand how those things work. So if a bank decides to build that in-house, they would have to be concerned about how to communicate with those rails and how to maintain a team that can be up to date to everything that's going on in the market. On the other hand, if they decided to go with outsourcing the core processing. Usually it's a black box. There's no differentiation between their competitors. So everybody who's using that platform, that system, like, we'll have the very same feature and the same capabilities. What we decided to build here is an alternative path to that conversation between build versus buy. So what we provide, what Pismo is, a full infrastructure to build financial services products. It's a headless systems, so we don't touch customer-facing application. We don't touch internet banking. We only provide a toolkit, a set of APIs, where clients, banks, fintechs, or every financial institution can build their products on top of that. We are pretty much like the same way that AWS and Google Cloud, they have the infrastructure of the services. We have something on top of them, which is the infrastructure for financial services products, with the very same code base everywhere in the world.
Right. I want to talk about the companies that use your service. And when I was doing research for this interview, I discovered that the largest bank in Brazil, Itaú, was a fairly early client of yours. That was obviously a massive win for you guys. I'm curious about, one, how you were able to land a client like that and what they were using you for exactly.
Yeah, actually, it was one of our first clients right after signing that seed investment round. And was by that time that we decided to pivot to something like more to enterprise clients. And the reason why they hired us at that time was because they were looking to something that could be more flexible. Like, it's hard when you have big competitors. Usually they have tons of systems piled up, one on top of the other. It's hard when there's something wrong. Sometimes it's hard even to find out where the problem is. So we built Pismo in a way we are not only using bleeding edge technology, programming languages, and public cloud, but also we built the whole platform in smaller pieces in a way where we can kind of make it renewed almost organically. We can just rewrite pieces of the system to make that in a way where we are up to date without having to shut everything down. So they were interested about looking to something that could be more flexible. And of course, but the challenge at that time was like, okay, I like what you are telling me. I like what I see, but can the system handle the huge volumes that I have as the biggest bank in Latin America at that time? So we partnered with AWS at that time, hired another company to run a bunch of load testing and to prove with evidence that we could handle a huge amount of data, a huge amount of transactions per second, to provide them with all the guarantees that they need in order to outsource the system. So the way that they started was the very way that we suggest for every client. Well, if you look at the market, usually players like us, most of the time the banks, they hate the processors, or on the best scenarios, they are only tolerating them because it is something that they need to have. But the way that we provide services, we are a SaaS company. We want the clients to be here because we are providing the best service and not because they are tied up to very long contracts. So what we recommend when we start is that it's something like build, test the system, launch like 5 or 6 or 10 cards in production and start using it. Like, we tell this to the executives, like, just for you and your team, build a full product, a full credit card using wallets, Apple Pay, Google Pay, all the features that you wish you could have. Start using and thus decide to move to us when you are convinced that this is actually the best solution. And we also built around a toolkit for migrations. I spent most of a huge part of my career as a database administrator, and many times someone came to my workstation with a tape backup and said, "Hey, this client is me migrating. Please do your magic." And it was hard because you lose information and you are translating from one database to the other. But when you have a full process by calling APIs one by one, like, we run migrations from legacy systems almost weekly. Clients are migrating like chunks of data, and they can validate. There's room to testing, to rolling back, and making the transition in a very smooth way.
So to most of these banks, particularly the large ones, I imagine they're still maintaining their existing infrastructure, right? Are they just using Pismo to launch new products on new infrastructure? I mean, how do your large customers think about where you fit in their technology stack?
No, actually, usually they launch new products only to test. And some of them are not even doing that. We are pretty much the big ones are working with migrations, the way that I just described it. Like they just start to migrate pieces by pieces, like chunks of data. And we have for most of them at this point, some of them are already fully migrated and fully running here. Some of them are using both platforms, the systems that they have internally and ours, like separating like client bases and then migrating new chunks every week. Like okay. We are already processing in production more than 100 million accounts. So it's a high volume of accounts.
Right. What are some of the companies, you know, that are using your technology today?
So we started with Itaú, as you said. He's our one of our first clients with a huge amount of data already processing here. We have Citi. We announced it last year to deploy Citibank, Citigroup to deploy the solution in dozens of countries. We have BTG, which has a full bank running on top of our platform, like digital accounts, debit cards, credit cards, and banking as a service. We have B3, we have Tyro in Australia, we have clients in India. So there's a bunch of clients running around the world.
Right. So then when you look at the US market, I'm curious about how you view, obviously there are companies like Marqeta, like Stripe that do some of the things that you do for the US market. Do you kind of, like you look at a developed market like the US, how do you view the companies there that are doing similar things to you?
Actually, by the time we started, like, of course, there was a lot of inspiration in other companies, but most of them in other industries. Stripe was one of them, more like the financial services industry. By the time we started, they were not still issuing cards. So they were working pretty much on the acquiring layer, which is a little bit different of what we are providing. But they were definitely an inspiration around not only the technology that they use, but especially on the documentation and their developers portal. And we like there was a lot of benchmarking around what we should develop and what we should put in place, especially it's a very hard, not only it's hard to sell, sometimes it takes a long time to sell a product like this, like the negotiation and the time, the lead time for start talking to a client and proving like, setting up POCs and signing and launching production, sometimes it takes 1 year. During the process, we were looking at these companies, especially like Stripe, on the documentation, because we sell to CIOs and CTOs, but software engineers are the ones who are using the platform, and there's no point in, like, sometimes it's hard. You should have the conversation with different layers, because if the on the executive level, they buy the solution. If the ones who are developing are not comfortable, it's hard to kind of move fast and make things work in production. So we inspired ourselves in Stripe set of developer portal and documentation in order to do that. And of course, in other companies like Spotify, like Salesforce, the way that Salesforce were putting and designing the back end of the solution was one of our first inspirations here. And the technology that we are using, like containers, like public cloud, and Golang, and different protocols, were something that by the time we started, that there were not so many companies using this kind of technology here in Brazil. So we had like many conversations with other startups and other companies in the U.S. Through the with the help of some of our investors to make the solution the best that we could at that point.
Right. Okay. Okay, I want to talk about Pix for a little bit, because obviously being a massive phenomenon in Brazil, it's brought a lot of people into the digital financial system for the first time. The scale of Pix has been truly staggering. Would love to kind of get your perspective on the impact that Pix has had on your business.
It's a very, very good question. Actually, for Pismo, there's no negative impact because the way that we built the system, and we spent, I used to say that we are a very privileged group because we had the opportunity to build a processing platform from scratch twice. And the second time, we spent like 1 year with at the dining room, at Julie's apartment, just mapping out what kind of things we couldn't solve with the previous solution and how we would do different this time. And there are lots of things around the technology, but also around how the system was built. And the way that we built this, the platform, we used to say that there are two different layers. We have one layer that we call the primitive one. So the way that we manage the ledger, the balances, and then we process transactions. And how a client is, how we identify a client is something that is secondary. It's not the main point of moving transactions from one place to the other. So the same way that you can make a purchase by using your credit card, you can do a PIX. We are also integrated with the back end of the banks. And for us, you are a client. You can identify yourself in many different ways. It can be an email, it can be a PIX transaction, it can be a credit card, a debit card, it can be your fingerprint, it can be whatever you want. So the volumes of transactions for us, it's just a migration from one product to the other because we are able to process any of them. So there's no for Pismo. And again, we are a technology company, so we are not... We used to say that like we are a tech fin, we are not a fintech because we don't have any, we are not a BIN sponsor, we are not a financial institution. So we only provide the technology to financial institutions to make their product. So there's no difference from for us from cards or PIX. We can handle any kind of financial transaction.
Right, right. Well, as someone who is in the the payments technology space, I mean, you must have been amazed by what PIX has done. I'd love to kind of get your personal take on the impact that PIX has had on your home country.
It's incredible. It's incredible the way that the impact that it has. And like we live here in São Paulo, but it's a big country and like everybody wants to spend holidays and spend time at the north, like to Bahia or in places where most of the people doesn't have access to bank accounts. Usually, since we launched PIX here, you can go to pretty much every place here. You can pay for an ice cream or even for a ride at the beach by using PIX. Like in my personal view, it's much more than a new way of paying. It's a way for inclusion. And when you put together fintechs that are allowing pretty much every people to open a bank account or a digital account, and with the PIX as a tool, even the ones who doesn't have access to credit or debit cards, they can be integrated in this digital world.
Okay, so I want to talk about your geographic push. I mean, you mentioned Australia, you mentioned Citi, obviously global, big global bank. What is your geographic focus? Do you try and move out into a different countries, or are you just sort of taking inbounds and dealing with companies one by one? How are you approaching it?
There was a conversation a couple of years ago, like before the acquisition of the company, when we were looking to places that where people would speak English. So this was the first thing, and we kind of like 3 years ago, we started building a follow the sum operation around the globe, especially because right after Latin America, the first client that we set outside of Latin America was in India. So then at that point, we decided to set a team in the UK in order to bridge the gap between time zones from Brazil and India. And then we started looking to places where people could speak English. It was the first thing. But because of the long lead time of signing contracts like this, usually we, even if we're not actively working in a specific geography, would be all the time open to conversations, especially with big banks. Like there are windows of opportunities to core replacement that happens like every 20 years or 30 years. So we must be open. We are all the time open to conversations, even in regions where we are not actively working.
Okay, you just touched on it, but I want to dig into the Visa acquisition that just got consummated, I believe, just a couple of months or maybe 3 months ago. But before we talk about that, when did you first start talking with these? Obviously, you're a payments processor working with credit cards. I'm sure you had conversations with people at Visa very early on. But when did the acquisition talks kind of start? And tell us how that process went.
As you just said, like we've been partnering with them since forever, since I started my career, like back in 1999, we were already working with them. And many times there were conversations around partnering instead of just providing and working as a processor, like looking at things that we maybe could be doing together. So we started talking and we had a view that their intentions of acquiring the company, I think about 1 year before signing, which was in June 23. I think middle 22 was the time when we started talking. Like they showed their intentions on acquiring the company. We, of course, we had just at that point raised the Series B fundraising round. We were not looking to deal like that. But after a couple of conversations, we decided to keep talking to see, to explore a little bit more on how would that be, and we are here now.
Apart from the financial aspect, which I'm sure was very positive for you and your family, I'm curious about what Visa brings to the table. Obviously, a massive, massive global footprint. But what did you see as the opportunity, things you could do with Visa that you couldn't do alone?
The main reason why we decided to explore this opportunity was because it's hard sometimes for a small company to provide stuff. Like we are already processing hundreds of billions of dollars in transactions each month. Mm-hmm. And we are still kind of a small company from Latin America. So it's pretty hard. Although at the same time, we fully believe in the potential of the platform. And we believe that we can be the next generation of payments infrastructure, but at the same time, it's hard to negotiate with big clients, like conversations around liabilities and the volumes of transactions that we are processing, it's hard. So not only Visa brings to the table access to pretty much every financial institution in the world, but also like we are now backed by a huge and strong and solid institution that can back us up in expanding to new regions.
Like it's only been 3 months. Is it business as usual at Pismo right now? Are there any, like how is sort of the integration going? Are they kind of leaving you to just run your business or what's it like?
The transaction was closed in less than 3 months. So we are working in integrating back office systems and things that are kind of HR and things like that. But we keep strongly working with an agnostic view. We are still and we'll keep providing services and processing not only Visa but also MasterCard cards. Providing we keep working in operating as a separate unit. And keeping the management, like the four founders, we would still be here. And the whole management team is still keeping us stronger than ever, looking for this next chapter.
Right. Okay. So then what do you think this acquisition means? Obviously, it was global headlines when it was first announced middle of last year. But what do you think it means for fintech in Brazil and for Latin America more generally? Is this kind of, obviously it helps raise the awareness, but I'd love to get your perspective on when you sort of step back and think, look at the whole Latin American fintech ecosystem. What does it mean having Visa acquire you guys?
I think there are two aspects. One, looking to fintechs who are looking to companies like us provide their services. I think not only for the Latin America ones, but everywhere in the world. Again, there's this kind of reputation behind like being backed by a huge institution like Visa. But when you think about the fintech, not only the fintech, but the startup ecosystem in the region, it's something that was like everybody was talking about last year because it was a very important deal for the local ecosystem. Like it was like we are providing core processing services to a huge American institution, a global institution. So this is something that we are really proud of. And I think we can, in many ways, inspire and show to other companies in the region that this can be possible.
Right. Okay. I'd like to close with, you know, a forward-looking kind of question here about, you have these core processing services that you provide. Where's the innovation that you feel like isn't here yet that you're looking forward to kind of bringing into what you offer? Like, where is all this going?
I think that like everybody's talking about Gen AI and other kind of like artificial intelligence usage. I think there are so many things when you look to huge institutions like that are still a lot to transform. There's no point in exploring Gen AI when you still have your back end relying on a system built in 1960. So I think there's a path to transformation, but we've been investing a lot in data quality, in ways of exploring information and using all these new technologies available to provide different services to customers. And I think there's a lot to improve in terms of how we still, like we are still using, you probably have your credit card. You probably saw that sometimes when you run a transaction on a Saturday, it takes sometimes 2-3 days to see that information in your balance. So this is something that we've been doing different since the first time. So there's no batching solutions here. And I think we've been challenging our clients to kind of get rid of things that are there because they were created in a time where resources were limited. We don't have any more resources of storage, resource of bandwidth and networks. So we should keep exploring in order to kind of raise the bar on the back end so we can, in fact, transform all the new technologies that everybody's talking about in real products to make the lives of the customers better instead of just doing things laterally and differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I have to leave it there, Daniela. Thank you very much. I mean, you've done an amazing job over the last, 8 years building Pismo, and congratulations on all your success and all the best for the future.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for listening. Please go ahead and give the show a review on the podcast platform of your choice and go tell your friends and colleagues about it. Anyway, on that note, I will sign off. I very much appreciate you listening, and I'll catch you next time. Bye.